Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio. It's a real pleasure to have you here. It's also a pleasure to have an incredible guest continue his series with us here on Close Up Radio, which is a service of Close Up Television and Radio, Dr. Michael Armour. For decades, Mike Armour, or Dr. Mike as he is popularly known, has compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor. He is a multi-dimensional achiever, and that consistently puts him in demand as an executive coach, business advisor, and trainer, focused on executive development, management, and leadership training, cultural transformation, and lots more. His book, Leadership and the Power of Trust, has been an Amazon bestseller, and he is a dynamic public speaker. Today, we are wrapping up a series of interviews with him that began almost a year and a half ago in September 2022, and it's been a glorious and eye-opening and impactful conversation throughout. Over that time period, he's completed over four dozen interviews with us and has really been the final episode, developing into and delving into a specific set of leadership challenges. Today, he takes up the challenge of leading teams. One of the most significant management transitions in the 20th century was the emergence of teams in the workplace. And the current century has only accelerated the use of these teams. In the next half hour, Dr. Mike will share his perspectives on how to lead workplace teams more effectively. Dr. Mike, welcome back to Close Up Radio. It's always a pleasure to have you with us and hope you are doing well. And you just returned from a drive from South Dakota back home to Dallas, huh?
Yes, I did. I'm part of a mastermind group that is the thought leadership group for C-Suite Network, which is a huge association of people who are in the C-Suite or who coach and consult leaders in the C-Suite. And we meet face-to-face once a quarter, and the man who leads the group, Jeff Hazlett, has a ranch in South Dakota. And once a year, we make the visit there. He usually calls this event in the early part of the year the big chill, because the tundra is still pretty frozen. Our weather was more like summer in South Dakota this time. I would occasionally see a patch of snow, but the weather was in the high 50s, and I got back to Dallas to weather in the high 80s. So wow. I don't know what happened to winter this year. It forgot it was scheduled to drop by.
It's almost 60 degrees here in the Northeast and mostly sunny today in the end of February. It's incredible. Nobody's complaining. We'll take it.
If you're going to do winter, this is the way to do it, huh?
This is the way to do it for sure. Absolutely. On this episode, we're going to be talking the theme leading teams. And I know in the introduction I mentioned that the 20th century really has given us rise to the use of teams in all corners of corporate life. From your perspective, Dr. Mike, why did teams become so commonplace in American industry and business?
There are, of course, a number of factors, but if we had to boil it down to one word, it would probably be the word complexity, particularly the complexity of the technology that we are manufacturing, the complexity of the logistic systems that we now must deal with, and the complexities of a very fast-changing world in terms of its buying and cultural tastes. When we began the 20th century, the average assembly line worker did not even have a high school education. Many could not read. The job skills that were required to work in most industries at the beginning of the 20th century were so simple, so easy to learn, that workers were basically interchangeable. And so if one worker turned out not to be the person you needed, it was simple to go out on the street and find someone else who could step into that role and fill it well. But as the century progressed and as we made universal education for those in their adolescent years part of the routine of American life rather than young people going to work at 14, 15, 16 to start earning money to help their family, we ended up with a more educated workforce, and our technology began to change so rapidly that we soon got to the point that no one person was a master of any particular set of skills well enough that they could come up with the answer to all the questions or all the challenges that might arise. And we had to start finding a way to create, I used the word mastermind a while ago to describe my experience this weekend, to create a collective mind tackling problems or bringing about a new initiative. And so as we moved into the second half of the 20th century, the competition and the complexity of the world we work in had grown so much that it was overwhelming to any one person to try to cope with that without the aid of a lot of collaborators and cohorts. As a result, we turned more and more to teams. One of the examples I use when I'm doing training on team leadership is I say, who invented the airplane? And of course, most people know the Wright brothers. And I say, who invented the space shuttle? Well, goodness, there were tens of thousands of people in hundreds and thousands of teams that put together various components of the space shuttle. But that is a perfect example of how the complexity has gotten to be such that we have to have teams to be successful in today's world.
That's so important. Absolutely. And sometimes we don't think we do, but we really, really do. In the collaborative effort together, everybody has a vision, and sometimes bringing that together and helping to sync that
Look at your own 40-year career in broadcasting. Think about the broadcast studios you worked in 40 years ago and those that you step into today. And how many teams behind the scenes must be doing their job just for you to be on the air when the red light comes on. Everything now depends on teams functioning well.
It really, really does. And they have to be well-oiled, too, like an engine that keeps moving forward.
Yes.
You know, on the website, you have line, build leadership, build teams, build success. Now, are you meaning that in building organizational or corporate success, team building is as critical as leadership?
In many ways, in today's world, that is true. A leader who cannot build, motivate, and inspire teams is going to be a leader who does not have much success. And if the leaders don't have success, the organization is not going to have success. The day in which the leader can be directive and, shall we say, a bit more commanding in his or her approach has been replaced by a day in which the leader has to be building healthy, vibrant, imaginative, engaged teams. And if those types of teams are not around the leader's impact is going to be very, very limited. I think I've shared in the past on these podcasts one of the most valuable pieces of counsel that I ever received from anyone, and it came from one of my early mentors, a personal friend who took me under wing. And he would say over and over, we all have a flat side on our wheel somewhere. If the sooner that we identify that flat wheel and build people and systems around us to compensate for it, the sooner we will be successful and the more successful we will be. Now, the first time he told me that was probably 1974, 75, something like that, even before we had the IBM PC and the Apple Macintosh. If that was true when he first said that to me, it was doubly true when he was still saying it to me 20 and 30 years later, not because he thought I hadn't heard him the first time, but because he saw how challenging it was to be successful, and he felt it essential to keep reminding me, build that team, compensate for your flat side, otherwise you'll be overwhelmed by the demands that you have to meet in order to be competitive in today's world. So yes, building teams is just as essential for success as building leadership in your organization. And of course, within your teams, as the ultimate leader of the team, you have to be building leadership there. Teams need internal leaders as well as the recognized appointed leader who is coordinating the overall enterprise.
How does leading a team differ significantly from leading any other group of workers?
There are some interpersonal aspects of it that are certainly different. In team leadership, the leader must be actively engaged with the team. The team is looking to the leader not just for example, but they are taking a lot of their nonverbal cues from the leader. For instance, I learned early on in my leadership of some turnaround efforts that when you're experimenting with different ways of approaching a challenge or overcoming a difficulty, some of the things that you experiment with are not going to work. And when you have a series of things that don't work out as well as intended, the team has its own emotional reaction to that. I've discovered that when those types of moments come, the team looks to the leader to see how the leader is going to react, and they tend to follow suit. If the leader reacts with discouragement, the team morale goes down further. If the leader lets the water roll off the proverbial duck's back, as we say, and says, okay, let's hit it again. The answer is out there. We just have not quite got there yet. And the team will respond that way. I compare it to a small child, a toddler, and I'm not saying that our teams are childish or anything like that. All metaphors break down, and this one could very quickly. But if you think of a toddler who is just learning to navigate on his or her feet, and they go toddling across the room, and they trip and they fall, as soon as they hit the floor and look up, who do they look to? If mom's in the room, they're going to look at mom. And what they're doing is watching her to get a cue as to how they should react. And so if mom says, oh, hon, did you hurt yourself? Yes. And all of a sudden the tears are flowing. If mom says, I bet that was funny, wasn't it? They'll laugh and hop up and they're off and going. We never quite lose that instinct to look to someone else to take the cue as to how we should react. And in the world of teams, that person we look to is the team leader. So the team leader has to be involved in an interpersonal way on a daily basis with a team in a way that may not be necessary in other kinds of settings where the leader is coordinating the work of a very large group, a very talented group that has a lot of self-direction built into the way it does business. And the leader is just more or less coordinating the big issues that have to be aligned in a precise and exact way in order for things to go well. When it's a team and not just an organization that wears the name team because it's in fashion, when it is really a team, it has got to be like that baseball manager in the bullpen or in with the team on the bench, continually interacting with him, interacting with the players on the field, interacting with the game, someone who is leading from the dugout the team that's on the field, and then leading everyone in the dugout when the team is off the field and batters are up. It's an engaging kind of role that leaders have to play.
Absolutely. What kind of leadership then you feel is most effective with teams?
First of all, it's got to be a leadership that, for lack of a better word, I would say is inspirational. Teams develop a mind and a spirit, a collective outlook that is more than just the sum of the parts. Teams that really work well together develop this psychic unity as well as an organizational unity. And leaders of really effective teams have learned how to tap into that and bring about not just motivation, which we talk about a lot, but inspiration. They keep the goal, the dream, the aspiration of the team before the team at all times, and keep exciting the team about what an impact they are going to make if they succeed. What kind of benefit will devolve to others when the team does what he is challenging the team to do. Now, the people who benefit may simply be another team in the organization. It may be the organization. It may be the public in general. One of the people I spent this weekend with is leading an initiative that is absolutely vital to the survival of this country if we were to have a catastrophic global war. And he is passionate about it. He has invested millions of his own dollars into getting this thing off the ground. And he has a team around him that is passionate about that cause. So sometimes it is a big dream, what the book Good to Great calls a big, hairy, audacious goal, a BHAG. Other times the goal is not so big, but the leader of the team has to keep inspiring people to pursue that purpose that the team serves for the benefit of others in the organization, others in the community, or simply the world in general. Another thing that the leader has to be in a team is very authentic, because teams and their leaders work so close together. The team members are going to see more of the leader's warts than is the case with someone who leads from afar. And all of these team leadership roles are becoming more difficult to carry out in a world in which many times the team is no longer co-located. The team is individuals scattered out here, yon, and everywhere. I coached someone a few years ago who had five team members. One was in the Philippines, one was in India, one was in Brazil, one was in France, one was somewhere, I forget now, in Africa, and they were his team, and they needed to function as a team for that huge organization to accomplish what it needed to accomplish to remain competitive and profitable. And yet they saw each other face-to-face once a year. And so one of the real challenges of leaders in this world in which workers are so dispersed and so far apart is building that psychic unity and capitalizing on it and finding a way to build the collective inspiration by underscoring at every opportunity the goal that the team is going for. That's not always quite as necessary, although it's an important part of any leader's role. It's not quite so important in other types of leadership settings as it is in team leadership.
So it's really interesting because leaders then have to determine whether to make a workplace team self-directed. How do they go about doing that?
Sometimes and let's clarify for people who may not understand what we mean by the term self-directed. Self-directed teams are given a lot of autonomy to make their own decisions. A classic example of this, I was privileged 40-50 years ago to visit a laboratory where one of the top high-tech companies in the world had brought together their best and brightest engineers. And these people had earned the right to be there. They were the people who had done amazing things in helping the company make innovative breakthroughs. And so the company was visionary enough. It wanted to take advantage of that innovative spirit and see how it could perform if just left to do so. And so they started bringing together these brilliant engineers from all over the world to this laboratory. They were usually given 3 to 5 year assignments to it and unbelievable budgets. They were free to spend that money however they wanted, developing whatever tools, inventing, patenting whatever equipment they needed to do to pursue some innovative idea they had. And those people were then just left to their own without anyone really looking over their shoulder other than to say, what can I do to help you? What are the problems that you can't resolve that I can break a logjam for you? That's the classic example of a team that is entirely self-directed. Now, some teams are better at self-direction than others because of the personality mix. And so to come back to your question, what are some things that you have to take into consideration in making a workplace team self-directed is, can these people collectively self-direct? Because the very nature of talented teams is that there is going to be conflict, at least conceptually, and sometimes conceptual conflict turns into emotional and interpersonal conflict. There's going to be conflict over how we should approach a problem, how we should design a solution, the methodologies we should use, the timetables that are realistic. Those divisions are going to be within the ranks. And if they cannot, among themselves, because of the nature of their personality, the quality of their character, consistently find workable solutions, then they end up like our Congress, where every time an idea is presented, you know, half of the Congress isn't going to present it because the presenter happens to have the wrong letter after his name on the roster of the Congressional House. And so this ability to collaborate, to be willing to forego one's preference in order to accommodate the best interest of the teams, to be willing to be held accountable by members of the team, to be willing to bring your best to the game, even if someone else is going to get most of the credit for what's accomplished. You've got to look at the personalities before you ever allow a team to be self-directed. And where it works magnificently. But where it doesn't work, it really does become not only a mess, it becomes a sticky mess because dissolving an unhealthy team does not add to the health of your organization immediately, because it unleashes all types of bitterness and resentment that they were held to account, as we might say, by the organization itself. And so the challenge of building a self-directed team is the art of the leader in understanding which groups of people can self-direct and which ones, simply because of personalities and other issues, are not going to be able to work together harmoniously without the strong presence of the leader himself. The challenge in that regard is so immense that it's one of the reasons that people who lead teams have to be exceptional in their people skills, because the interpersonal dynamic on teams is sometimes emotionally charged, sometimes very difficult to understand in at the level of its deeper ramifications, its deeper causes when there is conflict. And so the leader of a team has to have exceptional people skills. That then goes without saying to imply that if the team is self-directed, they too have to have exceptional interpersonal skills.
That's very important. Yeah, it really is, because it's a full circle situation. You know, obviously we borrowed the idea of teams in the workplace from the world of teams in athletics. Are there lessons that workplace teams should draw from sports teams?
Yes. One of the challenges of teams where you've got a lot of creative energy is that there's a lot of mission creep. They're put together to solve a particular problem or meet a particular challenge, but in this creative interchange, they start seeing related problems they could also address, and so they sort of reach out and embrace that problem, and then there's another problem, and once what was a very narrowly scoped team ends up with a very broad set of undertakings that it's trying to embrace, and those may be important, but they're not why the team was formed. I compare it to if you're putting together a baseball team, you don't want people spending their time in practice practicing dribbling a ball. That's not the game we're in. we need to know our game, and so teams need to learn from sports, know your game, know the most important skills for you to succeed in that game, and put your focus on those things. The other thing we learn from teams in sports is that when one is down, everybody pitches in to pick that player up, to lift their spirits, to get them out of the doldrums, to help them just put their mistake on the field behind them and get on to the next play. And teams need to learn that, workplace teams need to learn that from the athletic arena, because that's where underdogs turn games around in the final quarter or the final innings, is because no matter who has flubbed to this point that put us behind, we're all pulling for everybody so that we do come together and put it over the top in the final moments.
Really fascinating. What considerations should a leader take into account when assigning people to a particular team?
One is, are these individuals people who enjoy working on teams? There are a lot of people who do not want to be part of a collaborative team effort. They are really good as individual contributors, and they want to be individual contributors. Don't take someone who excels as an individual contributor and does not enjoy the interaction of or the dynamic of a team and put them on a team and expect them to succeed. The second is, how much diversity is there in the personality and the approaches of these people? One of the things that Nissan did that turned their whole design team around was that they set up a design team in San Diego that would compete with the design teams in Asia on coming out with new model concepts and actually designing those models. The team in San Diego purposely was set up so that it worked in two-man teams or two-person teams. There were some women in it. And they purposely put two people together who were different, markedly different from one another in their work habits and in the way they went at problems. And then the job of the manager was to manage the inevitable tension that would come out of those teams. But the Nissan's thought process was, if we've got people going at one another, we will create the kind of energy that if we can harness it toward creativity, we'll come up with ideas we would never come up with before. And they did. And so in very short order, all the design of Nissan shifted to the U.S. And away from Asia because they were able to put these teams together with enough diversity. They got a lot of good ideas, but they understood that diversity is going to bring with it conflict. And so management was super attuned to seeing conflict that was becoming destructive and unhealthy rather than constructive and creative, and stepping in and rechanneling that conflict so it got back into a creative channel again. So things like that go into making the final consideration as to who's going to be on a team.
Very important. A little extended here, but when companies engage you to help them build and develop their teams, how do you go about it?
First, I try to help the company get clarity as what the purpose of the team is. Again, this goes back to the mission creep we talked about a moment ago, the tendency for us to start playing a game that isn't the game we were recruited to play. So I want to be sure that I know as a consultant to the process exactly what the game is that the team is being put together to play. And then I'm going to start looking for those players on the team who are not a real good fit for that challenge. Maybe very talented people, very capable people. I've taken recommendations to companies to replace some extraordinary people on the team, not because they were lacking in capability or insight, but simply because they were not a good mix for that team. Then I'm going to do a lot of work with that team to help them understand how to manage the inevitable differences that are there. Because if it's going to be a very productive team, we do need that diversity. We need those diverse viewpoints. How can we take our differing points of view, argue for them forcibly, build the strongest case for them possible, yet do so with a tone and an outlook and an attitude that keeps the enterprise constructive? I'm going to have a lot of communication training up front and understanding the differences in personalities and how you deal with those differences in personalities, because if they don't understand that difference, then there are going to be needless areas of conflict that come up simply because of the inevitable tension that is there when we put differing people side by side and expect them to work harmoniously on something that maybe they both feel strongly about, but their feelings are pulling them in different directions. So it's that grooming of the attitudinal and interpersonal soil that I put a lot of emphasis on, and trying always to harness that within the framework of what is the game we're supposed to be playing? How do we have to play that game if we're going to win?
If folks are very fascinated by what we're talking about on this episode and even previous episodes, and I encourage folks to go back in the archives to hear the breadth and scope of extraordinary conversations that we've had with Dr. Michael Armour, sharing his wit and wisdom, his knowledge and his expertise over the many decades he's worn many hats in the corporate world and spiritual world and education and commerce. I mean, you name it, he's really had his hands in everything. Dr. Mike, what would be the best places for people to go to get the resources and to make that connection?
The primary website is leaderperfect.com. The word leader and perfect run together. And we describe ourselves as providing comprehensive leadership development services. My team and I provide consulting, coaching, mentoring, training, team building, strategic facilitation. I've assembled a team of people who are multi-talented. All of them have C-suite experience, and so they're used to working with problems at a very high level. And people can learn about the scope of services that we offer at leaderperfect.com.
A real pleasure, as always, Dr. Mike, speaking with you and hearing your take and perspective on all of these pressing issues and these different ways that we can come together and collaborate and unify. It's always a pleasure. I hope we do get a chance to chat more down the line. And thank you very much for today and, of course, the previous episodes that we have done together, which have been extraordinary. I've completely enjoyed having the opportunity to learn from you and know you personally, and it continues to be a joy as well.
Well, that's a mutual feeling. I have had very few associations that have been more enjoyable than these conversations we've had over the last few months, and indeed I will miss them going forward as I move on to other enterprises and undertakings. But thank you, Jim, for teeing things up so well week after week.
Pleasure is all mine. I'm sure we'll be chatting again, and do stay in touch. I look forward to that real friendship forged as a result. So blessings to you and the family, Dr. Mike. Keep up the extraordinary work inspiring others as you do, and we will definitely chat again soon, I don't doubt.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Have a great one.
All right. You take care. Our very special guest, Dr. Michael Armour, joining us here on the program. Truly a blessing to have an opportunity to chat with him, and it continues to be extraordinary. Hope you learned something as well. I encourage you to go back in the archives and dive in and dig deep. Really incredible conversations that we've had. His book, again, is Leadership and the Power of Trust. We went a little extended here. That was a little bit of an executive decision I made because he has information that is so important. And we had so many questions designed for him. We wanted to make sure we get them all in as we wrap up this particular series. We thank Dr. Michael Armour, and we thank you. This is Jim Masters, your host, thanking you for your time this time till next time and inviting you to stay right there. We'll be back momentarily with another extraordinary guest celebrated from around the world right here on Close Up Radio Live. Till then, all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.